Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you guys with us. Lots of fun stuff today. We've got Rob Driesline from Outdoor News. We're going to talk about the controversy going on with forward-looking sonar. It is going to be an entertaining segment. And believe it or not, there is snow in the forecast. Stay tuned where that's going to be happening when we return. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Hello, Ava.
Hi, it's just me. Yeah. Unfortunately, I apologize to the listeners. Good thing you have Rob coming.
We got Rob.
He needs to pick up my slack.
Yeah, the slack. Don's slack.
No, it's mine. We do miss Don. He'll be back soon.
Fishing.
Yeah. He's doing fun things. Yeah. So don't worry about Don. He's fine.
Don't worry about Don.
Just worry about
Sounds
us.
Like a movie.
Because...
Don't worry about Don.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. See?
It's like, dude, where's my car?
Yeah, I know. This
don't
could be good.
Don't worry about Don.
Don't worry about Don. And then just do a little map of these little jaunts that he takes.
Perfect. Know. We'll get a map with pins. Don't worry about Don.
Just throw darts at it.
Yeah.
Where it lands.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
Well, we're going to start off. I had a threatening comment in the lead-in.
Yes. And what was that S word you used?
Yeah. Yep. Snow. Snow is in the forecast, everybody. It is truly in the forecast. I couldn't have made it up. Last week, you couldn't have made up the fact that it was supposed to be 80 degrees. And it was like, what?
60.
And of course, right on the heels of that horrible
smoke.
Smoke. And I think that's pretty much across the Midwest. I know I was in New York previous week. And it was
around for
there.
A few days, went away.
Exactly.
Came back with a vengeance.
Well, 10 inches of snow could hit.
Where?
Colorado.
Okay.
It's going to be on one of the several of the peaks in Colorado. The reason that I brought this up is right now, snowpack in Colorado is currently at 323% of the norm for this time of year. Snow cover trails above tree line. I know a lot of people from our area, anywhere in the Midwest, they like to go out summer vacation out in Colorado. Be aware of that. It makes it difficult, and it will be slick, as well as in the mountains. It will be mountain winter driving conditions. So be aware of that. And
what does it say where exactly? Like, is it close to Steamboat?
It's going to be on Mount Bierstadt, and Pikes Peak is also going to be getting snow totals close to that.
I'm not too familiar with the geography, but I have a friend that lives in Steamboat.
Yeah. It's not going to be, I don't think Steamboat's at a high enough elevation for it, but nonetheless.
I'll ask her.
It's going to be.
I'll let you know if she got snow.
It's going to be crazy. Can you believe it? We're in the middle of June, and they have 323%. Now, here's the reason that's good. The reservoirs out there have been really in a tough state. As you know, the reservoirs in Arizona, Meade and all those, Havasu, they've all been low. And the water that they have gotten from snowpack as well as rain and precipitation has changed that whole area dramatically. So that's a big deal. I know in Sakakawea, in that area up in North Dakota, that relies on mountain snowpack and snowmelt. So all those areas are, it's actually kind of nice because they're not fast, fast melting right now.
Right. It's steady. Yeah.
With 323%. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's pretty crazy. But they definitely are there with the snow, and that's a good thing.
Well, I'm happy that the snow word has not made our forecast.
Really?
Not yet.
I know. Well, it felt like it today. So that was one of those yikes moments. another topic. Anyway, I went out to Lake Michigan two and a half weeks ago. Caught a bunch of salmon.
Yep, you had a good time.
Co-host had a great time, and decided to go buy myself a big smoker with the auto feed and the pellets and the whole nine yards, and have proceeded to become a smoking guy.
Well, just another thing for you and Don to bond over.
I'm excited. It's welcome to play. I've got it on my phone so I can, it's through my Wi-Fi.
It's ridiculous. It's the coolest high-tech ever. It is.
Yep. So I had some the other day, and of course the problem is, if you have recipes, this is the reason to bring it up. If you have a recipe that you want me to try with salmon, send it in to The Valley Outdoors, info at The Valley Outdoors. Send me a recipe. I will try it, and we'll talk about it on the air, and we may have something special for you.
Cool.
This story blew me away. Wisconsin muskie raked an angler's hand after he released a bluegill. Pierce Anderson of Winnicon, he was fishing on Pike Lake Chain in Price County, Wisconsin, over the Memorial Day weekend when a large muskie inhaled his hand. Now, this is a 21-year-old kid. The teeth were heavily raked his flesh. He had his hands in the water for about 3 seconds when the muskie grabbed him.
Ugh.
And he was just trying to wash his hand after letting a bluegill go.
Touching a fish,
It's pretty amazing. I've got the photo. And he said that you're just casually fishing. You're just casually fishing shallow water for panfish and catching a walleye or two with his parents and his brother Alex from their pontoon. And a few other residents were there in nearby boats as well. And everybody was enjoying some panfish action. Good company, stories, trading between the boats, kind of a fun little experience. Catching a lot of bluegills and walleyes, weren't keeping anything really. You know how it is when you're catching fish, you get fish gunk on your hands. Well, I put my hands in the water to wash off the gunk, and big muskie engulfed my entire hand in his mouth. He saw the gills flare, looked right into its mouth as it grabbed his hand, and as an instinctive reflex, he pulled it back. I just got bit by mistake, he said. No one believed me. I thought for sure my dad saw the fish because it was right there on that side of the boat. Three fingers and the palm of my hand were cut up pretty good. I said, I'm a wimp with blood. So I covered it up. We took the boat over to some friends that were close by. They bandaged him up. This is the funny part about it. They kept on catching bluegills. He reeled one in, and a muskie grabbed the bluegill on his line. He ended up hooking the muskie, but it ended up falling off. This is his brother, because he couldn't do anything with his hand. Pierce couldn't do anything. It was his hand cut up. And he said, it all happened so fast. He said, I let the fish go about 30 seconds prior. I was just washing my hands, doing nothing spectacular, and there it was. So his dad and brother went back out casting for muskies for about the next 2 hours, and they didn't get anything. But he said he's healing up pretty well, getting some mobility back, swelling's going down, and he said antibiotics are definitely helping.
I was going to say, the infection.
That's what it looks like.
Ow.
Isn't that one of those beautiful things in life? Gotta like that.
I could go my whole life without that happening.
It happened to me on a big pike up on our trip up to Ashkenham. So, yeah,
interesting.
Great. Hey, stick around. Rob Driesline. We're going to be talking forward-facing sonar. See you, bye. Welcome back, everybody. I'd like to have you guys check us out on Facebook. Like us, please. And, of course, on thevalleyoutdoors.com. The interactive map lets you find anything you are interested in across the whole United States of America and on any of the Department of Natural Resource type websites.
We got them for you.
It's there. You can find it. And speaking of cherished individuals, we have a good friend of the show on with us, and we're going to talk about a topic that's shall we say, been controversial at best. Mr. Rob Driesline from Outdoor News is with us. Rob, good to have you with us.
Eric, always a pleasure.
And appreciate you taking the time out of the busy day and lawn cutting now that you can actually walk outside and not have to feel like you smoked a six-pack of cigarettes outside.
Yeah, so that was wild.
It's very, very, very nice outside now. So Let's talk electronics. Talk turkey. You know, the topic has been a strong topic of conversation amongst the tournament people. Obviously, the tournament side of it, it turns into more of a, I don't know what you call it, a very matter-of-fact thing. I'm going to go look for my fish on my graph, and that's what I'm going to do all day. And it starts to remove some of the instinct. And in my opinion, it takes some of the instinct out. Is it effective? Yeah, it's crazy effective. The article this week in Outdoor News, it piqued my interest. I said, I got to talk to Rob. What are your thoughts on this? I know it's controversial. It can be polarizing, but you know, people can be open minded as well.
Sure. You know, the topic started in my mind, I bet close to a year ago, Eric, you know, talking to some guides in central Minnesota who kind of would murmur to me, would whisper under their breath. They'd say, hey Rob, we're using this live sonar, this forward facing sonar, and we're absolutely lethal with it. And when everybody's using it, are there going to be any fish left? You know, but Dave, Rob, don't quote me on it. You know, that kind of, those kind of rumors and rumors. You know?
Don't tell anybody I said it.
Kind of, a little bit of that, yeah. And, yeah, I started looking into it more. And you know, I remember when Garmin, you know, unveiled the Panoptix at ICAST, I think it was in 2016, 2017. Yep. And I have friends that use it, and you know, they say, hey, we just like looking at fish. I have other friends that are saying, yeah, this is shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
And everybody seems to agree that, yeah, this could have an impact on fisheries when the price point comes down and everybody's using it.
Yeah, and to give a little background that may not be into the conversation as far as what this really is. And what it allows you to do is have a transducer that's focused on pointing away from the boat, not down like traditional sonars are, but you actually have the ability to move that sonar, kind of like you're taking a picture out in front of the boat. And the clarity is such that you can actually pick out fish, pick out bigger fish, and see exactly how far out they are from the boat at whatever angle you're pointing it at. So you can actually pinpoint cast to these fish that are sitting at whatever point, even in, you know, the weed line edges, sometimes even into the weeds a little bit. But you're able to see that detail that you've never seen before. It's different than a 360. The Hummingbird 360 is a swinging, it's a rotating sonar. This is different because you're able to point it, and it's a very high intensity, clear, crystal clear signal. And everybody's coming out with it now. And it's there.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, in real time. You know,
exactly.
Should, you know, make that point that, you go and you scope out, you use your 2D, you use your mapping, you use your side viewing to go, you know, find some structure. You work it over with your live scan. If there's nothing there, you move. And,
yep.
You know, I've got people telling me that, you know, in Leech Lake, for example, they're seeing, you know, legions of boats out there. No one's casting. All anybody's doing is staring at their screens. So they can zoom in on fisheries. The ice fishing applications, you know, everybody seems to agree, hey, I don't have to drill 20, 30 holes anymore. I can drill two or three and locate the fish, and I'm on them. You know, you compound that across 20 or 30 fishing parties on a body of water on one day, that's a much more efficient group of anglers. And what does that mean for our fisheries? That's
exactly
the question I think we need to ask.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is that it piqued my interest because one of the more difficult things to find is crappie because they suspend, right?
Yeah.
You just scan this into a bay that's traditionally holding crappies. Oh, there they are. You go over to it, say 15 feet away from it. You put spot lock on. You cast to that body of fish, and you can keep scoping it because they'll shift and move. You can shift and move with them. And instead of, well, where in the world did they go? They were here a minute ago.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know, Rob. You know, my personal feeling on this is in tournaments, I'm still questionable on it. And I'm questionable on it because it turns away from a making intelligent decisions or saying, you know what, there's fish here. Am I going to get them to bite or not? And am I going to focus and stay on these fish. Are there bigger fish here or not? And it's not getting to that point where I think they're still here. I know they're still here. My pre-fishing backed that up. No, it's, I can see the big three. There's three big fish sitting right over there, as opposed to, I know that they'll sit in this key spot and you cast to them and then you get it. So it changes what fishing used to be. I'm not saying that change is bad, but it does change in a tournament. It goes from that other element to, hey, I'm just going to sit in front of my graph and watch my graph and just wait. And, right. You know, granted, you know, you go out to a reservoir like Oahu, you're going to go along and you're going to look for fish and you're going to say, nope, there's no fish on this one. And you're going to go, but it's different in that scenario because you're trying to basically just find a spot that you're going to fish and try to catch those fish. In this case, you're working one particular fish and you can see it. You move your sonar to it as opposed to, I need to keep my boat over the top of this thing. This is a whole different world.
You know, there's this counter argument that we always hear is you can't make fish bite. Well, you know, you kind of can.
Yeah, you can.
Compared to the old days, right? When, you know, maybe you went by a fish once and it decided not to bite. Now you see that fish and you try multiple offerings to try to get it to bite. And in a way, you're getting that fish to bite, right?
Yeah.
The other point you hear is, well, we have limits for a reason. We'll just have to adjust limits. Well, that affects everybody, even people who can't afford this equipment. You know, the other issue is hooking mortality.
Yeah, and that's the big thing.
A lot of people say, well, we're out there catch and release fishing anyway. Well, you know, if you're catching and releasing 20, 30, 40 walleyes from deep water all day, that's potentially a lot more dead fish than the average, you know, person who's going out there and taking two or three fish home.
Exactly. And that's taken into consideration when they're looking at the fishing pressure and the limits. Those are pieces and parts. And if you followed Mille Lacs at all, as far as the way that they segment the limit and they set the limit, that is brought into it. It's that mortality rate and the number of fishing fishermen that are there and their average catch rate. And if it starts to take off, I'll give you a prime example. We talked about this a little bit prior to us coming on the show. The muskie guys that are winning or have been winning in Wisconsin in some of these lakes, they're running six units, three aside. And they've since, the conversation I had was that they have now banned it in those tournaments. You cannot use that type of sonar forward-looking in that particular element. You still can use a 360 because it's a slow sweeping, but you can't go to that level. I think they've eliminated it in that particular musky tournament event. And, I mean, literally, they could see the fish swimming to the bait. They're watching it, and they said, okay, you got one coming. Well, then you know you're going to keep a figure eight going, or you know don't change your cadence or maybe add a twitch to it because that reacted, that's what happened. Or, hey, there's three fish sitting out 70 feet out to the right, and especially open water. You and I both know those muskies in open water, they've been untouched, and they're looking for food. You go out there and see a muskie swimming along, and you can cast to it. Guess what? And it hasn't been able to be achieved before. So it changes that whole element, and I think it becomes, I don't know.
I was telling you off air, Eric, you know, I know some boys that are hardcore outdoorsmen, hardcore fishermen, hunter, and that's great. But they've never been musky guys before. Now, all of a sudden, I'm seeing all these pictures that they're sending me of all these muskies they're catching. And I know they got a live view sonar. And it's like one of these things where, you know, everybody's a professional musky fisherman now. And think about the pressure on these fish, even if they're being caught and released.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. What is the mortality rate? Because we know that black bass, or you know, a regular bass, whether it was, they call them black bass, as far as mortality rate judging was done in a catch and release scenario. They did the testing on it. They'd hold them in pens once they were caught. They'd hold them for a period of time and see what the catch rate was. Well, that's where the catch and release tournament situation came up, and they're like, "Oh, it's fine, but you do walleye with catch and release." that mortality, hooking mortality, is sky high compared to a bass. And
I think it's probably higher for muskies too.
Absolutely.
Not as high as walleyes.
Well,
but
in the energy that's given at that point, they put everything into it. And at that point, how much are they going to be devastated at that point to actually continue on? So yeah, even if it's not catching, even if it's not involving, did you keep it and bring it home? Muskie's not that way, but how many times can a muskie get pounded in a summer or in a given 3-4 days before it's not going to be able to make it? And
there's not a lot of data on this. I mean, there is some on bass, like you mentioned, but I was talking to Brad Parsons. I quoted him, the DNR fisheries chief, and he said, we need more data, and there's not a lot out there. I mean, they're just starting to scratch the surface of things like, barrow trauma with crappies in the winter. You may have seen some of our coverage on that this past winter. But I mean, they cite previous studies and there's like, three worldwide.
Exactly.
There's not a lot of data.
No, there is not. Rob, I think this is definitely something for future conversations. And the technology is amazing. I encourage you guys to go check it out. I mean, it's a super fun way to go out and spend a day on the water. No way around it, but I will say it's definitely something that needs to be looked at and considered. And also, the other thing you got to consider is get yourself an online membership with Outdoor News. I got myself one. It is the coolest thing ever. You don't have to go through it at the paper if you don't want to. You can pull it up on your phone, whatever it is, but get yourself an Outdoor News membership. Rob Driesline, as always, thank you. You da bomb. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Eric. Take care.
You bet. Have a great night. Evening, whatever, morning, whatever time it is, I don't know. Have a good one, Rob. See you, bye. And we'll be right back with more Valley Outdoors.
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Always fun talking to Rob.
He's just got his finger on the pulse of everything that's going on. Such a good guy.
The nice part is he asks some very
important questions.
Intriguing questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as soon as I saw that article, I said, we got to get on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because my buddies that we've been all talking about it as far as on the tour, and everybody's, we got to have it. It's great. I understand it. It's great.
Yeah, it is great.
But the issue becomes what happens on a bigger scale.
Well,
that's part of the issue. And, the more the merrier, it all depends on what you're talking about, more the merrier.
Yeah.
Which lines up perfectly with my next story.
Oh.
The more the merrier in this case, not a good thing. Are you a mosquito magnet?
Yes. Uh-huh. I sure seem to be.
It might be for one unpleasant reason.
Oh, great.
You just stepped right into it. New research has found that smelly armpits may turn some people into a mosquito magnet. This apparently is the reason that some people are so plagued by the annoying critters, while others get off scot-free, according to scientists. So those of you that have a little extra odor, you might want to take care of that. Pesky insects are drawn to body odor, also known as BO. Mosquitoes can find us from 350 feet away and get
a whiff of it if you have BO.
If you have that.
Okay.
Yeah. And obviously, mosquito carry a lot of different things. They can carry African malaria, anopheles. So
whole
anyway.
Nine yards. Yeah.
They let these mosquitoes go in a ice rink-sized outdoor testing area in Zambia. And it was a research out of Johns Hopkins University. The team from Johns Hopkins released 200 hungry mosquitoes each night using infrared motion cameras to observe how they landed on evenly placed and spaced pads heated to 35 degrees, mimicking a human skin. The aromas of six volunteers sleeping in surrounding single-person tents was piped into the pads over six consecutive nights. It was a good sign they were ready to bite. Body odor is apparently more attractive bait than CO2 was, which is kind of a cool thing. Night after night, some people were more attracted to mosquitoes than others, the studies found. One volunteer who had strikingly different odor consistently attracted very few mosquitoes. They were surprised at how effectively the mosquitoes could locate and choose between potential human meals within such a large area. They also identified 40 chemicals that were identified as being attractive. People who were more attractive to mosquitoes consistently emitted more carboxylic acids produced by the skin microbes. By contrast, the person who was least attractive gave off fewer acids, but tripled the amount of eucalyptol, a plant compound.
Wow.
How about that? When you see something move from tiny laboratory space and the odors are right there and the mosquitoes are still finding them in a big open space, it really drives home just how powerful these mosquitoes are as host seekers. So there you go. And this study could lead to development of more effective repellents, traps, and other ways to prevent you from getting bit by those nasty little creatures.
It doesn't surprise me. I'm a stinky person. I stink. That's all right. I'm the first one to admit it. You know?
Well, the sad part is, there's a lot of things that can get transmitted with the mosquitoes, and that's the part that sucks.
Well, and then when I get bit, I get the welts, you know?
You got the welts going on.
I get the welts. The welts from the bites.
Well, I'm going to see if I can't get some welts. I'm going to head out. I'm going to see if I can't do some fishing. Some fish, you guys. Go out and have some fun in the outdoors. That's what this is all about.
And wear deodorant.
And wear sunscreen, please.
Yes.
Have a great day in the water, wherever you're at in the outdoors. For the Valley Outdoors, Ava, myself, and Don, who is somewhere.
Don't worry about Don.
Don't worry about Don. See ya.